Chapter 5 Basic Doctrines Tripitaka or Tipitaka. Tripitaka is a collection of the teachings of the Buddha over 45 years in the Pali language, and it consists of sutta, conventional teaching, vinaya, disciplinary code, and abhidhamma, moral psychology. The Tripitaka was compiled and arranged in its present form by those arahants who had immediate contact with the Master himself. The Buddha has passed away, but the sublime Dhamma which he unreservedly bequeathed to humanity still exists in its pristine purity. Although the Master has left no written records of his teachings, his distinguished disciples preserved them by committing to memory and transmitting them orally from generation to generation. Immediately after the final passing away of the Buddha, 500 distinguished arahants held a convention known as the First Buddhist Council to rehearse the doctrine taught by the Buddha. Venerable Ananda, the faithful attendant of the Buddha who had the special privilege of hearing all the discourses the Buddha had ever uttered, recited the Dhamma, whilst the Venerable Upali recited the Vinaya, the rules of conduct for the Sangha. 100 years after the First Buddhist Council, during King Kalasoka, some disciples saw the need to change certain minor rules. The Orthodox monk said that nothing should be changed, while the others insisted on modifying some disciplinary rules, Vinaya. Finally, the formation of different schools of Buddhism germinated after this council, and in the second council, only matters pertaining to the Vinaya were discussed, and no controversy about the Dhamma was reported. In the 3rd century BC, during the time of Emperor Asoka, the third council was held to discuss the differences of opinion held by the Sangha community. At this council, the differences were not confined to the Vinaya, but were also connected with the Dhamma. At the end of this council, the president of the council, Venerable Moggaliputta Thissa, compiled a book called Katavatthu, refuting the heretical false views and theories held by some disciples. The teaching approved and accepted by this council was known as Theravada. The Abhidhamma Pitaka was held in Sri Lanka in AD BC. It is known as the Fourth Council under the patronage of the pious King Vattagamini Abbaya. It was at this time in Sri Lanka that the Tripitaka was first committed to writing. The Tripitaka consists of three sections of the Buddhist teachings. They are the Discipline, Vinaya Pitaka, the Discourse, Sutta Pitaka, and Ultimate Doctrine, Abhidhamma Pitaka. 1. Vinaya Pitaka. The Vinaya Pitaka mainly deals with the rules and regulations of the order of monks, bhikkhus, and nuns, bhikkhunis. It describes in detail the gradual development of the sasana, dispensation. It also gives an account of the life and ministry of the Buddha. Indirectly, it reveals some useful information about ancient history, Indian customs, arts, sciences, etc. For nearly 20 years since his enlightenment, the Buddha did not lay down rules for the control of the Sangha. Later, as the occasion arose, the Buddha promulgated rules for the future discipline of the Sangha. This Pitaka consists of the five following books: Pitajika Pali, Major Offenses; Pasitiya Pali, Minor Offenses; Mahavagga Pali, Greater Section; Kulavagga Pali, Smaller Section; Parivada Pali, Epitome of the Vinaya. 2. Sutta Pitaka. The Sutta Pitaka consists chiefly of discourses delivered by the Buddha himself on various occasions. There are also a few discourses delivered by some of his distinguished disciples, such as the Venerable Sariputta, Ananda, Moggallana, etc., included in it. It is like a book of prescriptions, as the sermons embodied therein were expounded to suit the different occasions and the temperaments of various persons. There may be seemingly contradictory statements, but they should not be misconstrued as they were opportunely uttered by the Buddha to suit a particular purpose. This Pitaka is divided into five Nikayas or collections. Digha Nikaya, collection of long discourses. Majjhima Nikaya, collection of middle-length discourses. Samyutta Nikaya, collection of kindred sayings. Anguttara Nikaya, collection of discourses arranged in accordance with number. Kudaka Nikaya, smaller collection. The fifth is subdivided into 15 books. Kudaka Pada, shorter text. Dhammapada, the way of truth. Udaina, heartfelt sayings of paeans of joy. Itta Vuttaka, thus said discourses. Sutta Nipata, collected discourses. Vimana Vatu, stories of celestial mansions. Petta Vatu, stories of petas. Teragata, psalms of brethren. Terigata, psalms of the sisters. Jataka, birth stories. Nidesa, expositions. Patisambhita, analytical knowledge. Appadana, lives of saints. Buddha Vamsa, the history of Buddha. Kariya Pitaka, modes of conduct. 3. Abhidhamma Pitaka. The Abhidhamma is to a deep thinker the most important and interesting, as it contains the profound philosophy of the Buddha's teaching, in contrast to the illuminating but simpler discourses in the Sutta Pitaka. In the Sutta Pitaka, one often finds references to individual being, etc. But in the Abhidhamma, instead of such conventional terms, we meet with ultimate terms such as aggregates, mind, matter, etc. In the Sutta is found the Vihara Dasana, conventional teaching, while in the Abhidhamma is found the Paramatta Dasana, ultimate doctrine. In the Abhidhamma, everything is analyzed and explained in detail, and as such, it is called analytical doctrine, Vibhajjavada. Four ultimate things, Paramatta, are enumerated in the Abhidhamma. They are Citta, consciousness, Cetasika, mental concomitants, Rupa, matter, and Nibbana. The so-called being is microscopically analyzed and its component parts are minutely described. Finally, the ultimate goal and the method to achieve it is explained with all necessary details. The Abhidhamma Pitaka is composed of the following works: Dhamma Sangani, enumeration of phenomena; Vibhanga, the book of treatises; Katha Vatu, point of controversy; Pugala Panati, description of individuals; Datu Katha, discussion with reference to elements; Yamaka, the book of pairs; Patana, the book of relations. According to another classification mentioned by the Buddha himself, the whole teaching is ninefold, namely 1. Sutta, 2. Gaya, 3. Vayakarama, 4. Gatha, 5. Udana, 6. Itivutaku, 7. Jataka, 8. Abhutadhamma, 9. Badala. Sutta. These are the short, medium, and long discourses expounded by the Buddha on various occasions, such as Mangala Sutta, Discourse on Blessings, Ratana Sutta, the Jewel Discourse, Metta Sutta, Discourse on Goodwill, etc. According to the commentary, the whole Vinaya Pitaka is also included in this division. Gaya. These are discourses mixed with gathas or verses, such as the Sagatavaga of the Samyutta Nikaya, Vayakarana, literary exposition. The whole Abhidhamma Pitaka discourses without verses, and everything that is not included in the remaining eight divisions belong to this class. Gatha. These include verses found in the Dhammapada, Way of Truth, Teragatha, Psalms of the Brethren, Terigatha, Psalms of the Sisters, and those isolated verses which are not classed among the Sutta. Udana. These are the paeans of joy found in the Udana, one of the divisions of the Khudaka Nikaya. Iti Bhutaka. These are the 112 discourses which commence with the phrases, "Thus the Blessed One has said." Iti Bhutaka is one of the 15 books that comprise the Khudaka Nikaya. Jataka. These are the 547 birth stories related by the Buddha in connection with his previous birth. Abhutada Dhamma. These are the few discourses that deal with wonderful and marvelous things, as for example, the Akariya Abhutada Dhamma Sutta of the Madhyama Nikaya, number 123. Vedala. These are the pleasurable discourses such as Chula Vidala, Maha Vidala, Sama Diti Sutta, etc. In some of these discourses, the answers given to certain questions were put with a feeling of joy. What is Abhidhamma? Abhidhamma is the analytical doctrine of mental faculties and elements. The Abhidhamma Pitaka contains the profound moral psychology and philosophy of the Buddha's teaching, in contrast to the simpler discourses in the Sutta Pitaka. The knowledge gained from the Sutta can certainly help us in overcoming our difficulties, as well as in developing our moral conduct and training the mind. Having such knowledge will enable one to lead a life which is peaceful, respectable, harmless, and noble. By listening to the discourses, we develop understanding of the Dhamma and can mold our daily lives accordingly. The concepts behind certain words and terms used in the Sutta Pitaka are, however, subject to changes and should be interpreted within the context of the social environment prevailing at the Buddha's time. The concepts used in the Sutta are like the conventional words and terms lay people use to express scientific subjects, while concepts in the Sutta are to be understood in the conventional sense. Those used in the Abhidhamma must be understood in the ultimate sense. The concepts expressed in the Abhidhamma are like the precise scientific words and terms used by scientists to prevent misinterpretations. It is only in the Abhidhamma that explanations are given on how and at which mental beats a person can create good and bad karmic thoughts according to his desires and other mental states. Clear explanations of the nature of the different mental faculties and precise analytical interpretations of the elements can be found in this important collection of discourses. Understanding the Dhamma through the knowledge gained from the Sutta is like the knowledge acquired from studying the prescriptions for different types of sickness. Such knowledge, when applied, can certainly help to cure certain types of sicknesses. On the other hand, a qualified physician, with his precise knowledge, can diagnose a wider range of sicknesses and discover their causes. This specialized knowledge puts him in a better position to prescribe more effective remedies. Similarly, a person who has studied the Abhidhamma can better understand the nature of the mind, and analyze the mental attitudes which cause a human being to commit mistakes and develop the will to avoid evil. The Abhidhamma teaches that the egoistic beliefs and other concepts such as I, you, man, and the world, which we use in daily conversation, do not adequately describe the real nature of existence. The conventional concepts do not reflect the fleeting nature of pleasures, uncertainties, impermanence of every component thing, and the conflict among the elements and energies intrinsic in all animate or inanimate things. The Abhidhamma doctrine gives a clear exposition of the ultimate nature of man and brings the analysis of the human condition further than other studies known to man. The Abhidhamma deals with realities existing in the ultimate sense, or Paramattha Dhamma in Pali. There are four such realities: Citta, mind or consciousness, defined as that which knows or experiences an object. Citta occurs as distinct momentary states of consciousness. Cetasika, the mental factors that arise and occur along with the citta. Rupa, physical phenomenon or material form. Nibbana, the unconditioned state of bliss which is the final goal. Citta, the cetasika and rupa are conditioned realities. They arise because of conditions sustaining them cease to continue to do so. They are impermanent states. Nibbana, on the other hand, is an unconditioned reality. It does not arise and therefore does not fall away. These four realities can be experienced regardless of the names we may choose to give them. Other than these realities, everything, be it within ourselves or without, whether in the past, present or future, whether coarse or subtle, low or lofty, far or near, is a concept and not an ultimate reality. Citta, cetasika, and nibbana are also called nama. Nibbana is an unconditioned nama. The two conditioned nama, that is citta and cetasika, together with rupa form, make up psychophysical organisms, including human beings. Both mind and matter, or nama-rupa, are analyzed in Abhidhamma as though under a microscope. Events connected with the process of birth and death are explained in detail. The Abhidhamma clarifies intricate points of the Dhamma and enables the arising of an understanding of reality, thereby setting forth in clear terms the path of emancipation. The realization we gain from the Abhidhamma with regard to our lives and the world is not in a conventional sense, but absolute reality. The clear exposition of thought processes in Abhidhamma cannot be found in any other psychological treatise, either in the East or West. Consciousness is defined while thoughts are analyzed and classified mainly from an ethical standpoint. The composition of each type of consciousness is set forth in detail. The fact that consciousness flows like a stream, a view propounded by psychologists like William James, become extremely clear to one who understands the Abhidhamma. In addition, a student of Abhidhamma can fully comprehend the Anatta, no soul doctrine, which is important both from a philosophical and ethical standpoint. The Abhidhamma explains the process of rebirth in various planes after the occurrence of death, without anything to pass from one life to another. This explanation provides support to the doctrine of karma and rebirth. It also gives a wealth of details about the mind, as well as the units of mental and material forces, properties of matter, sources of matter, relationship of mind and matter. In the Abhidhammata Sangaha, a manual of Abhidhamma, there is a brief exposition of the law of dependent origination, followed by a descriptive account of the causal relations, which finds no parallel in any other study of the human condition anywhere else in the world. Because of its analytics and profound expositions, the Abhidhamma is not a subject of fleeting interest designed for the superficial reader. To what extent can we compare modern psychology with the analysis provided in the Abhidhamma? Modern psychology, limited as it is, comes within the scope of Abhidhamma insofar as it deals with the mind, with thoughts, thought processes, and mental states. The difference lies in the fact that Abhidhamma does not accept the concept of a psyche or a soul. The analysis of the nature of the mind given in the Abhidhamma is not available through any other source. Even modern psychologists are very much in the dark with regards to subjects like mental impulses or mental beats, Dhavana Sita, as discussed in the Abhidhamma, or Dr. Graham Howie, an eminent Harley Street psychologist, wrote in his book, The Invisible Anatomy. In the course of their work, many psychologists have found, as the pioneer work of C.G. Jung has shown, that we are near to the Buddha. To read a little Buddhism is to realize that the Buddhists knew 2,500 years ago far more about our modern problems of psychology than they have yet been given credit for. They studied these problems long ago and found the answers too. We are now rediscovering the ancient wisdom of the East. Some scholars assert that the Abhidhamma is not the teaching of the Buddha, but it grew out of the commentaries on the basic teachings of the Buddha. These commentaries are said to be the work of great scholar monks. Tradition, however, attributes the nucleus of the Abhidhamma to the Buddha himself. Commentators state that the Buddha, as a mark of gratitude to his mother, who was born as a Deva in a celestial plane, preached the Abhidhamma to his mother together with other Devas continuously for 3 months. The principal topics, Matika, of the advanced teaching, such as moral states, Kusala Dhamma, and immoral states, Akusala Dhamma, were then repeated by the Buddha to Venerable Sariputta Thera, who subsequently elaborated them and later compiled them into 6 books. From ancient times, there were controversies as to whether the Abhidhamma was really taught by the Buddha. While this discussion may be interesting for academic purposes, what is important is for us to experience and understand the realities described in the Abhidhamma. One will realize for oneself that such profound and consistently verifiable truths can only emanate from a supremely enlightened source, from a Buddha. Much of what is contained in the Abhidhamma is also found in the Sutta Pitaka. Such a statement, of course, cannot be supported by evidence. According to the Theravada tradition, the essence, fundamentals, and framework of the Abhidhamma are ascribed to the Buddha, although the tabulations and classifications may have been the work of later disciples. What is important is the essence. It is this that we will try to experience for ourselves. The Buddha himself clearly took this stand of using the knowledge of the Abhidhamma to clarify many existing psychological, metaphysical, and philosophical problems. Mere intellectual quibbling about whether the Buddha taught the Abhidhamma or not will not help us to understand reality. The question is also raised whether the Abhidhamma is essential for Dhamma practice. The answer to this will depend on the individual who undertakes the practice. People vary in their levels of understanding, their temperament, and spiritual development. Ideally, all the different spiritual faculties should be harmonized, but some people are quite contented with devotional practices based on faith, while others are keen on developing penetrative insight. The Abhidhamma is most useful to those who want to understand the Dhamma in greater depth and detail. It aids the development of insight into the 3 characteristics of existence: impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and non-self. It is useful not only for the periods devoted to formal meditation, but also during the rest of the day, when we are engaged in various mundane chores. We derive great benefit from the study of the Abhidhamma when we experience absolute reality. In addition, a comprehensive knowledge of the Abhidhamma is useful for those engaged in teaching and explaining the Dhamma. In fact, the real meaning of the most important Buddhist terminologies such as Dhamma, Kamma, Samsara, Sankhara, Paticca, Samuppada, and Nibbana cannot be understood without a knowledge of Abhidhamma. Mind and matter. Nama Rupa. What is mind? No matter? What is matter? Never mind. According to Buddhism, life is a combination of mind, nama, and matter, rupa. Mind consists of the combination of sensations, perceptions, volitional activities, and consciousness. Matter consists of the combination of the four elements of solidity, fluidity, motion, and heat. Life is the coexistence of mind and matter. Decay is the lack of co-coordination of mind and matter. Death is the separation of mind and matter. Rebirth is the recombination of mind and matter. After the passing away of the physical body, matter, the mental forces, mind, recombine and assume a new combination in a different material form and condition another existence. The relation of mind to matter is like the relation of a battery to an engine of a motor car. The battery helps to start the engine. The engine helps to charge the battery. The combination helps to run the motor car. In the same manner, matter helps the mind to function, and the mind helps to set matter in motion. Buddhism teaches that life is not the property of matter alone, and that the life process continues or flows as a result of cause and effect. The mental and material elements that compose sentient beings, from amoebae to elephant and also to man, existed previously in other forms. Although some people hold the view that life originates in matter alone, the greatest scientists have accepted that mind precedes matter in order for life to originate. In Buddhism, this concept is called relinking consciousness. Each of us, in the ultimate sense, is mind and matter, a compound of mental and material phenomena, and nothing more. Apart from these realities that go to form the nama-rupa compound, there is no self or soul. The mind part of the compound is what experiences an object. The matter part does not experience anything. When the body is injured, it is not the body that feels the pain, but the mental side. When you are hungry, it is not the stomach that feels the hunger, but again the mind and its factors makes the body digest the food. Thus, neither the nama nor the rupa has any efficient power of its own. One is dependent on the other. One supports the other. Both mind and matter arise because of conditions and perish immediately. And this is happening every moment of our lives. By studying and experiencing these realities, we will get insight into 1. What we truly are. 2. What we found around us. 3. How and why we react to what is within and around us. And 4. What we should aspire to reach as a spiritual goal. To gain insight into the nature of the psychophysical life is to realize that life is an illusion, a mirage or a bubble, a mere process of becoming and dissolving, or arising and passing away. Whatever exists arises from causes and conditions.